Now, moving on to the final session for the day. Michael, do you want the podium or would you like the table? Okay. I'll now hand over the microphone to Michael Cromie from the Office for Disability, and then we'll come back to me just for some closing comments for the day. Thanks.
Maybe I'd be better off having the table between me and the crowd. Hi, everyone, and thanks. I'll say thanks from me to you, Robin, after you thanked yourself earlier on. I work in Office for Disability. My name's Michael Cromie, and I'm the manager now of Strategic Engagement. So last time I came here, I was the manager of the office. There's been some changes in the office, and I mentioned to Robin that I'll just briefly... And apologies to a number of you who probably have no dealings whatsoever with the Office for Disability, but I am going to bore you a little bit with the detail on that. So we fund the Victorian Disability Advocacy Program. So, Mary, in your terms, we're an insider, but we're an outsider when it comes to the DSS because, you know, we're not part of the federal system, but we gather morsels of information through our bilateral discussions with them, and hopefully I can share some of that today, but probably no more than useful than what Mary's already provided. In fact, I got a lot of useful information from you, Mary, so thanks for that. So the office is basically 11 people, two of whom are here, Sarah and Amy in the front, and we have two areas. One is strategic engagement and the other is policy and strategy. Angela Healy is the manager of the office, and as I said, I'm the manager of strategic engagement. So I just want to briefly mention a few things and then throw it over to you for questions. State disability plan. So Victoria's had a state disability plan now since 2013. Actually, we had one before that as well, but that was not so much of a whole of government piece, but very much focused on service delivery. So the new state disability plan, newish, 2013 to 2016, is currently in place. But with the new government, we're interested in how the government was going to view the state disability plan. I'm pleased to be able to say, and there was a media release on the 17th of March to this effect, that there will be another state disability plan. And in terms of consultation, I would think from all the messages we've got from our minister, Minister Foley, and from the Labor government, that they're very, very keen to get out and about hearing from people. We've also got a lot of information already through the social inclusion inquiry responses that that came in and questionnaires that we've been running on a periodic basis. So all that will be really, really useful already. So if you've already had your say on various things, it's not going to be lost in that process. But definitely the way that there will always be a state disability plan as long as the current Disability Act remains in place. And it's really, really important. Mark mentioned before the NDIS, I guess, being viewed as the panacea and that the services are there now. So in your what you were referring to, Mark, was obviously that advocacy would be viewed as not required anymore. The State Disability Plan kind of continues effort across all areas of government. So it focuses on health, education, all the other areas that also impact on people with a disability. And certainly through the information we receive through the QDC reporting, Robin, obviously are things that you hear about and see every day in your practice. So the importance of the plan remains. We would love to see more. A lot of the feedback we've had is about how clear and specific the actions are across government. Yes, we would all like to see that more so, and we're really hopeful that we can continue on with other government departments and getting them to focus on removing barriers to people with a disability. And I'm really aware of these aren't really push statements, and they're not. I'm trying to also drop any jargon, so catch me out. Really happy to be pulled up on that stuff. Some of my thunder, Mary, was stolen too because I was interested in sort of making sure that people were aware of the opportunities they could feed into those broader DSS pieces, and I think it's really, really important that that occurs, the engage at dss.com.au. Is something you should definitely get on and we'll be having a look at as well. Again, just for the state-funded disability advocacy providers, you'll know that the current service agreements cease on the 30th of June this year. So the department will be renewing those service agreements and you'll receive a letter to that effect and they will be renewed for 3 years. That's good before you clap. I should have started with this. I should have done it the other way around. So obviously, because, as again, Mary, you mentioned the kind of the discussions that are happening at a state and federal level about the future of advocacy within the National Disability Advocacy Program, and DSS are very keen, I think, to get that sorted out. May, June this year is kind of the timelines I'm hearing about a review and a refresh, it's being called, of the national program. We're really keen to understand what that looks like and participate, hopefully, in that as well, and then work on what the Victorian program might look like beyond that as well, and as part of that, hopefully, because you would like to think, in a review of a program of that nature, that the current ways in which states are treating their own advocacy programs, if they have them, will be strongly considered throughout that. So we're very, very keen to participate. We'll certainly be putting our hand up to discuss our view of advocacy, which, by the way, we view as very important. So whilst we will do three-year agreements, and this is the disclaimer that I need to read, so there is always the provision to enable variations and may be invoked based on the arrangements agreed for full scheme rollout of the NDIS. So the clap was premature. Fine print. It's always there, George. It's always in the service agreements. Unfortunately, but it needs to be made a bit more clear at the moment for all organisations that are providing. So it's not just limited to advocacy information. Organisations will be receiving the same sort of advice. We don't know what the program's going to look like. So as we find out more, the current statement that will go out through your letters, and it'll probably be word for word, service agreements with the department include a provision to enable variations. This may be invoked based on the arrangements agreed for full scheme rollout of the NDIS. So sorry for the disclaimer at the end. I really wanted to leave plenty of opportunity, I guess, for any questions today, because I've got no doubt that there are some around the room. So Pauline, I've thrown the hand straight up.
Thank you. Thanks. Hello, hello, hello. Yes, there I am. So am I reading you right when you say, and by the way, we support advocacy, does that mean that the state government has a commitment to funding advocacy into the future?
At the moment,
is that the position that will be put in the refresh that happens in May, June?
So the difficulty is that at the moment, whilst we await our federal partner really in this is a bigger funder of the advocacy program in our state than what we are. We really need to get a better picture of what their plans are and participate in that before we can make any clear sort of statement about what Victoria's going to do. I can't be any more definitive than that. It is actually very much in, you know, the state federal considerations that we're stuck in the middle of at the moment. So our view of advocacy, and there's nothing to suggest that's going to change at the moment, is that it's really, really important. And the state, our advocacy program in Victoria, I think, is so strong and so important in terms of giving you know, that voice that was spoken about earlier on, representation to people with a disability here. Sorry, can't say anything else than that at this stage. So the NDAP, when it's being reviewed, May, June, as I understand it, we'll definitely pick up on that, and I think later on this year we'll be able to say what it's going to look like and what Victoria is going to do as a result of that. Oh, sorry, the National Disability Advocacy Program, which is being reviewed by the federal government, who has the kind of carriage of that document. But by the way, sorry, I know there's some other questions. That won't be limited to just us feeding into that. There will be opportunities for consultation as well with yourselves, and I think Robin, your sort of forward-thinking proactivity around push statements, different ways of making sure that advocacy is seen, heard, and people are aware of its importance, is very timely. Sorry, I don't know your name.
It's Kathy Barakas.
Kathy, is it?
Yeah. Hi. Just thinking about the push statements, does the department actually put an economic benefit to the work that is being done? Do you have any way of valuing it that goes back into dollars and cents?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. We haven't established that to date. if there was one, it'd be really, really useful exercise to be able to, you know, present that as being for every hour of service provided through an advocacy provider. We view that the Victorian society benefits to this degree. If you're aware of any research that's been done.
Can I suggest, I was fortunate enough to do a Masters of Education and Disability was one of the topics that I chose to look into. And there is measures around employment benefit. So the advocacy that I do as a parent for my daughter to get her into open employment means that there'll be less cost for the disability support pension in the future. So you can actually start identifying and start measuring. What is it measured?
Yeah.
You know, can't be managed. So I think it's time for advocates and disability organisations to start thinking more corporate-like. And if it's not apparent, I'm from the corporate sector.
I share that view.
Okay.
I think there's
that's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, but I think I think some of the issues that might sit around that are the degree to which you can.
Little steps is fine.
True. Incremental kind of ways. Yeah, absolutely.
Can I just add to that for a second? One of the advocacy organisations in Canberra, Atticus, they did a piece of work last year, and they got Deloitte, one of the big companies, to just scope out a project, which they haven't got the funding to do yet. And also Dana tried over a number of years to get the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare to be interested in doing a piece of work around advocacy. We couldn't find anybody to fund it. So there's the answer is there's very little research that's been done into advocacy on any aspect of advocacy outcomes, let alone the economic benefit. And Robin actually had emailed me, and I had a couple of weeks ago about this, and I hadn't even responded to her email because I could find very little, tiny things, but no real research. And one of the things that, if you think just, you know, intuitively about it, yes, for individuals, advocacy will provide better outcomes, and you might be able to measure that in terms of dollars, maybe. For systems, that might not be the case, because for systems, what happens when an advocate's involved is it may cost the system more money. You may get a better outcome for the person, but the system will have to pay. So it's a complicated thing that if you're measuring the outcomes for the person, yes, but if a government department's trying to measure the dollars that costs them, then having advocates involved may cost them more money.
I was going to suggest not just for the individual but for the community, which is where I was heading, and I was going to bring this up earlier, but if we go to the Disability Commissioner's complaints list and identify common complaints, education would be one, and then pick on that one and actually try to put some metrics around that, I think that would give a connecting piece between the advocacy through complaints and the turnaround that the department can actually start embracing actual projects.
Thanks, Cathy. We might talk further about that, Cathy. I think there's a question down here that's been waiting for some time. So. Yes.
How many of those people would be people with a disability?
That's a good question too. It's hard to say.
Roughly?
Well, it's hard to say because it's not always obvious, and some of those people...
So how many people would identify as having a disability then?
Don't know.
Really?
I don't know how many have identified themselves as having a disability, but you may not know. I might have.
What about the Disability Services Commission? Do we know what percentage of people identify...
No, I don't know.
...employed then? Oh, okay, it would be good to have those stats.
I don't think they'd be available because we
don't
wouldn't...
Don't you think?
No, we wouldn't provide that information because it would be breaching people's confidentiality, as with any organisation, I think. Sorry, was there another question there?
My question might sound a little bit of a tangent, but I'm asking it for a reason, and I'll explain the reason after I ask the question. So my question is... Disability Advocacy Victoria, DAV in brackets, has been, I understand, funded as the PEEP for Disability advocacy in Victoria. I don't know if there's anyone here from DAV. My question is, how does the Office of Disability see them in terms of the who's who in the zoo of advocacy? And I guess my reason for asking this is that as very small advocacy organisations who are often just funded for individual advocacy, some are funded for both, it's very hard to address all of those policy things that come to us. Yeah. I'm finding that we have to write a submission once a month, you know, at the moment, or even twice a month. But we need resourcing to make that happen. And do we turn to the peak, or do we turn to Robin in her, you know, in her wisdom, or what do you suggest?
So, to answer the first part of the question, Disability Advocacy Victoria was provided with short-term funding over 2 years. I think it was in 2012-13 and 2013-14 to set themselves up as a sustainable peak into the future. So at the moment they don't receive any ongoing funding, and their position probably comes under the overall advocacy sector and how things land with all that. In terms of how you would currently provide advice, the Office for Disability certainly still plays a role in trying to gather the views of the sector. We definitely want to use the QDC data a lot better than we currently have been. I think that's really important that people in completing their QDC forms provide us with that kind of more qualitative information about what they deliver. And, yeah, all that feeds in, I guess, to the pieces of work also around push statements and so forth.
OK, so the answer is there won't be a peak, a funded peak.
No, I didn't say that.
Huh?
I didn't say that.
Ah.
No, I just said it comes under the...
You said their funding ran out.
So they're not currently funded, but they're still in operation. In terms of the future of advocacy and how Victoria want to treat advocacy, those decisions are still to be made.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Hi, Jack speaking. My question was actually Jenny's question. Around what is the level of employment of people with disabilities in your organisation, but more broadly.
Yep.
And I think it actually really is a really important point. And I think to sidestep it and say that personal disclosure of disability is to be asking personal information really is really, really problematic. And I think if we look at other minority groups in sectors, if we look at Indigenous people, if we look at GLBTI people, in the sectors that directly affect them, we see that affirmative action of having those people in positions of power and authority within those spaces is actually really important, and it's really important for social change. And to not see that in the disability sector, and to not see people with disabilities being supported and trained and assisted to get to higher management levels is actually really problematic and keeps us in silos.
I agree.
Can I respond.
I was going to come back to that actually after the follow-up question. So we know at the moment across the VPS, it's around 4% of people with a disability are in. Across the Victorian Public Service, it's around 4%. We know across the Department of Health and Human Services that it's around 5%. Is that acceptable? No. In terms of what the Office for Disability is doing about that, we're putting some strategies forward to our immediate department, as well as trying to affect the other government departments as well. And I'm happy to talk about that in more detail next time, because there is actually quite a bit happening to try and improve the way in which government, as a huge employer, employs people with a disability in the areas that we work. So, yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you. And sorry, I did mean to come back to that. To that point, that it is known, but it's just not known at a really, really small level, like with 11 people within our area.
So this is less of a question and more of a statement, but I'm doing placement with George and White Ass at the moment, but I also work for Danielle Green, who was the Shadow Minister for Disability back in the day. So there's a couple of different things rattling around in my brain. One is that just for, I guess, for you guys to know, the Labor, there's a Tony Clark who ran for Ringwood. He is now heading up a what we're calling Inclusive Labor Board, which is going to work very much like Rainbow Labor and all these as well. So, but it'll be... It'll be around disability itself. So that's something that's very slowly coming forward towards towards a new thing for Labor to do. Yep. So, and I think something that, for me, that's been really valuable is through my placement, I've really been shown the importance of advocacy in this area. And it's something that I don't think... I think also in government itself, there's... A miscommunication between people with disabilities and what the government sector are doing and what the government departments are putting forward. Yep. As well. So I think within the next 12 months, I think you're going to see a little more people with disabilities actually getting an input, because whether or not you're a Labor voter, you can still join as a Labor member and join Inclusive Labor to actually have a say in policy without actually going as far as joining a policy committee or doing that sort of thing. You actually can have a say. So I'm very excited about it, because I've been trying to have a say in disability for the last 4 years, and being in opposition, it's been very frustrating to watch what the previous government did in the sector, and it's something that that me and Tony and the rest of the people, I think there's only like five members at the moment, but we're pushing really hard to actually get it off the ground, and it's something I think you're going to see more of. So, yep. Yeah.
There were some really strong statements in the Labor platform in relation to disability employment within the public service as well as procurement activity, so... We were really excited to see that, because that's really important, for sure.
I just had a little bit more information to feed back with regard to employment rates in the NDIA. I met with Louise Glanville, who's in charge of recruitment, and they're at 11% now and aiming for 15% by the end of this year, and seem to have some very good policies in place to make that happen. So they might be worth talking to too about what it is they're doing that's got the rates so much higher than what we're saying VPS is.
4% across the VPS, yeah. The Victorian Public Service. Yeah, we've used that as part of our papers around the way in which they've done it to encourage our own departments to do the same. Things like having people with a disability on interview panels, just for by way of example, is one way. Yeah.
Yeah, the needs for advocacy are several and should be identified. But one of them we see is that government departments say it as it should be rather than as it is. They talk about how it should be. They talk about how wonderful they're doing, how wonderful they're providing this and that. But in fact, when it comes down to it, they're not. And that's why you need the advocacy to chase that up. So that should be looked at. Why are we needing the advocacy? We need to be working on getting rid of those problems that are stopping these things happening that should be happening. Thank you.
Yeah, Mike. In regard to the employment of people with disability, we've been knowing now for many years that in some European countries they have set quotas of employment for people with a disability within the public and the private sector. And that has made a difference in the country in terms of opportunity for people with a disability in employment. I know here in Australia we got one to talk much about that because of the idea of tokenizing people with a disability. But personally, I would prefer to be tokenized and get the opportunity to show what I can do and therefore overcome the tokening rather than not having the opportunity at all to be in employment. So I would like to know your view on this.
I'll give Michael 30 seconds of think time for that one. I'm just mindful that we're running over time. So if you have a question or a statement, please raise your hand. And then, Sarah, can you tell me how many people have got their hands up? Okay, last questions. Christian's got the last question. So, Michael, I'll give you an opportunity to answer that question and then I'll conclude the forum.
Just need to so the opportunity to be within the public service employed?
No, basically the opportunity to be employed both within the public service and the private sector through quotas.
Quotas. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Quota. Yeah. My view of quotas, I think they'd be great to have quotas because I think that's what affects change. It's a personal view. I think if you're actually going to, and there's a myriad of views one way or the other about quotas and, you know, the perverse logic of them has been argued in a bunch of different places as well. But my own personal view is, yeah, quotas are really important. That to have something they have to shoot for, like what the NDIS have done, definitely pushes that gender. So they started with 12%. They've reached 11. Now they're aiming for 15%. And I think with quotas, you actually can see that it works in that case and that there's a whole bunch of other strategies that you need to put around that, around the education of the workforce that are already there to make sure that but all those things need to be part of that system. And opportunities in a whole range of different areas need to be there as well. So, you know, internships, scholarships, those sorts of things need to be in place as well. Some of those things we've got, are they at the extent that we would like to see them? No, not at the moment, but, you know, we're working on building that. Because people, when they get in, I think you mentioned at the start, you want an opportunity. When they get in the door, they've already demonstrated with the Department of Human Services before that they can do extraordinary things, and we all know that. You know, they can do fantastic things like, you know, anyone else can. So those people that have got a foot in the door are the ones that I think have found themselves to be able to either stay on in the current role or find themselves another job within government. So it's getting them in the door is the thing that we want to see happen because it educates the workforce in and of itself, the whole workforce. Forget about disability awareness training, that's something else you can do, but certainly just the individual being there and visible I think is really important. So, yeah, agreed. Quotas are great. Office for Disability wouldn't disagree with that, I don't think.